Okay, hi, I'm Chris Hecker, and this is what I'm going to talk about here. And I don't know, how many people here have seen me speak before, or heard me speak before? This is going to be fast, even for me. Are you ready? So I'm going to talk about my game Spy Party, which I'm assuming most people know what it is, and I'm actually not going to go into it that much, or much at all. And I'm going to focus mostly on the back-end stuff, which is what I've been spending the last 4 months on, totally focused on getting what I'm calling the early access beta open up, which is going to be a paid beta program, which is kind of like the de rigueur way to fund your game these days in the indie community. But first, I thought I'd here's my demo. There it is. But this is not all. This is the sum of about a month's worth of 12-hour days of research. But you know, just so you're not disappointed, this demo is just one single JPEG. It's actually multi-resolution, so we can take this part, which is the PayPal flow to creating the account, and we can zoom in to this page, so it's multi-resolution. And you can see here there's a lot of scribbles on the paper, and you can see a lot of hard writing. And then you can focus in on, say, this part, which is where I create the LDAP and Kerberos accounts, and we can zoom in on that, too. And here's the multi-threaded Perl server that'll do that when it gets a request from some PHP. But it doesn't even stop there, because we can zoom in on this, and we're four deep now, and here's some Perl code. That creates the Kerberos account with the ticket issuance disabled until the PayPal IPN comes in to say that the actual payment went through. And you can see that it deletes the account if it fails. And there's a bunch of different reasons the password might fail, like it could be in the dictionary, that sort of thing. So what the hell am I talking about here? So I am deep at the bottom of like a thoroughly nested recursive rabbit hole right now, and so I figured I'd bring you guys along for the ride. But the opportunity to do this talk kind of when Alex sent the mail out, and I said, oh, well, that will give me an opportunity to kind of like maybe crawl back up out of the rabbit hole for a second and at least rationalize why I'm in the rabbit hole, if not explain it to myself, maybe to you guys too. It's kind of important to say that there's actually, you should completely ignore everything I'm about to tell you. And the obvious answer to why that is this. Enter the IP of a server to connect to it. This is the level of polish necessary to make $33 million right now on the internet. So when I sent mail to Marcus today and I was like, I'm going to show this image on my talk as why you should ignore me completely. And he said, we're working on it. $33 million later. But so you clearly don't need any of the stuff I'm about to tell you to make this work. And that's great. That's a really amazing thing. I mean, you can, with awesome gameplay, kind of throw it up there and hope. And so it's not actually even clear what is necessary to make to have a successful game. So it's really important for me to point out, I'm not actually saying any of the stuff I'm about to talk about is necessary to make a good multiplayer indie game. I'm not even done with all the stuff I'm about to talk about, so I don't even know if it works yet. This is kind of like what part of the reason you go indie is to do it your way, right? And so this is the way I'm going to do it, and I would recommend against it. All right, so ignoring that giant $33 million sized elephant in the room, what are AAA indie games? I want to make what I call a AAA indie game. And there's AAA indie games is something you just kind of understand, like in a gut level, right? Like you've all seen these games. You can all kind of know what I'm talking about when I put these games up. And when I did a talk at the Independent Game Summit at GDC this year, I kind of did a bunch of research on these games, which I had been thinking about since before Spy Party, and I kind of boiled it down into three characteristics that AAA indie games all seem to have. And there are a couple of counterexamples nowadays, but before this year, actually, this was basically pretty much true. They were all polished to perfection. They clearly contained lots of love, and they were all highly anticipated before launch. And I kind of want to focus on that first one when talking about why I'm doing what I'm doing with the multiplayer network infrastructure. And so my goals for Spy Party's beta infrastructure, so I want to, like, you know, start inviting people in to play the game. The game, I've had Spy Party set up at multiple different conferences, like PAX, both PAX West and PAX East. GDC, it was a finalist for the grand prize of the at the Independent Game Festival this year. Of course, also, so was Minecraft, so we all know how that turned out. And so people have been playing the game. I've been doing a ton of playtesting, both at Maxis, where I used to work, and just around the Bay Area and that sort of thing. Basically anywhere, IndieCade, a whole bunch of different places. And I'm really happy with the way the game's coming out. Now, I think it has a couple years left in it before it's ready to ship, because of this, like, you know, the amount of love and polish I want to put into the game, and where I and the kind of amount of headroom I think the game design has. But the game is already interesting and compelling, so that's great. And knock on wood, I don't screw it up. But it's great to already have that base of a really deep, interesting multiplayer game. So any hardcore player skill multiplayer competitive game needs to have a long a long beta program, a long and broad beta program with a lot of people pounding on it to make sure it's balanced and tuned, right? And so when I showed the game at PAX East this year, I was squatting in some friends' booth, and you know, Minecraft came out, it kind of blew up last summer, but I really wasn't thinking in terms of doing that sort of thing for Spy Party. I was thinking in terms of, okay, I'm probably going to have to ask some of my rich friends to borrow some money, because I have enough money to fund myself for 3 or 4 years, but I can't pay someone's salary. So it's like, okay, I'll borrow a couple $100,000 from some friends, and we'll see how it goes. But everybody, basically, to a person who got up from PAX and got up and said, you know, when are you going to ship? And I'd say probably a couple years from now, and they were like, what are you talking about? That's insane. Can I pay you for it now? And this just happened over and over and over and over again. And I think I credit Minecraft with this, like, just complete change in the way that people are thinking about game development these days. I mean, the players. The players want to participate early, and they're willing to pay for that experience. They know the game's fun because they sat down and played it, word of mouth, and they're willing to pay for that. And it's really interesting because when you think about it, and this is what I started thinking about as I was, like, you know, attempting to go to sleep after PAX, if you think about, if you take money from someone, even if they're a friend, the interests are not completely aligned, right? So, like, that person wants their money back, obviously, with interest or with royalties or whatnot. But they might have different opinions about what makes a good game versus a bad game. So, for example, like, Will Wright, a good friend of mine, he and I argue all the time about game design. So if I were going to take money from Will, I would feel guilty if I was ignoring his advice about game design. Yet, I want to make my own game. That's the reason I'm indie, right? Whereas this open paid beta thing that's kind of happening now, your interests with the players are completely aligned. They're paying you the $15 or whatever it is, because they know exactly what they're going to get, and that's what they want. They want the thing that you're trying to make. So by crowdsourcing the funding, I think it ends up the interests are completely in alignment, and that's really powerful and new and kind of world-changing, actually. I don't need anywhere near $33 million to make this game, and I don't expect it to hit the same way Minecraft did, but, I mean, you could knock 2 zeros off that, and I would be completely set for making the game, right? That's the level of polish I need to do. And that's great. I mean, 2 orders of magnitude is a lot. So polished, secure, scalable, and flexible. So I wanted to do this open beta, and I need to do this open beta just I was assuming I was going to do a free beta, or a closed, large-scale closed beta, because I need to do it for tuning and balancing. You know, if you want to make a Counter-Strike or a StarCraft-level player skill game, which is what my goal is, you have to do this large-scale beta. But then it became clear that I could actually charge for the beta, fund the game at the same time, and get all the player feedback that I need. So that's great. So I realized that it kind of broke down into four things about the beta that I wanted to do. I wanted to do it my way, and I wanted to do it right, as by my definition of right. So polished, secure, scalable, and flexible. And now, are these the right goals? I have no fucking idea. Polished, or at least able to be polished later, meaning don't screw yourself, right? So here's an example, single sign-on. So I want to have beta forums, right, for people who are in the beta. I need to have a password, because it's a network multiplayer game, for playing the game, right? I want to have bug tracking, like Bugzilla database, you know, feature requests, that sort of thing. Lobbies, ranking, blah, 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 right? Downloads, you know, you want to be able to download. So the right thing to do, so the easy thing to do in that case is you have a different password. You just set up phbbb, right? phpbb, and then people have to log onto that, and then you know, people have to log onto Bugzilla, and then people have to log into the game, and you're doing all these completely disparate different things. The right way to do it is to obviously have a single user account and a single password, have them all communicate, all the systems communicate behind. If you change your password in one place, it changes everywhere, and they all use the same authentication and authorization. It's totally possible to do this, it's just more work. Auto discovery of lobby servers, I don't want you to enter an IP address, for example. NAT punch through, relay fallback, these are things that mean like, if I'm on a local network, and I want to play my friend, you can't, the Spy Party is a client server and a peer-to-peer game. I'm playing directly with my friend. You can't do that, unless you do what's called NAT punch through or NAT traversal. I have to get out of my firewall and back into their firewall. Okay? All of these things are all totally possible. You just have to put all the puzzle pieces together, and there's about a million of them. Personalized beta homepage, like everything should know who you are when you're logged into the single sign-on thing. AJAX forms, you know, when you're entering data, it should all, you know, request to the server and know and completion and all of that sort of thing. All the normal stuff you think about with a relatively polished, like modern feature set of web interfaces and game interfaces, all of those things should be there, at least in crappy versions where you can clearly see that, like, I can improve this later, but the architecture is there. I want it to be secure. The most important thing about being secure these days is you do not do it yourself. You do not write your own secure, quote-unquote, authentication or authorization system. So I did a bunch of reading and a bunch of research for that month, and I decided on Kerberos, which is MIT's authentication system, which is, you know, what runs Xbox Live Arcade and all of Microsoft Active Directory and all of, you know, a ton of Unix stuff, all of, you know, universities. And it's actually a really, I mean, I'm a super snob about programming architecture, and it is a really clean, the code's horrible, but, like, the architecture of the security thing is really cool. And so it allows things like, if you skip down, client-server authentication and client-client authentication, and that's a really cool thing. In fact, that's something that Steam doesn't even really do. Single sign-on, again, that's part of security in addition to polish. This difference between authentication, which is auth-n, and authorization, which is auth-z, you have to learn all this stuff. I didn't know any of this stuff until I stopped, you know, until I came home from PAX. I'm like, all right, I'm going to see how, if I can do this. So, boom, deep dive. The internet is such an amazing resource. All of the stuff, and I want to be clear, this is not remotely saying the game is not going to be hackable. I mean, that's an idiotic thing to say, especially in a PC game, right? Eventually it'll be on Xbox Live and PSN and all, and wherever else. But in terms of the beta is going to be PC. Or unwearable. But, and I'm certainly not going to have any DRM. But what it does mean is that if you are running a clean client, you're someone to trust. If you're running a clean client and you haven't hacked it, and you talk to someone else, you can actually guarantee that they are a clean client, you know, that they have an account. So there's some audit trail that you will be able to say that sort of thing. And that's a powerful thing. Like, I can now say, you know, I can ban someone, and they might be able to hack it and run their own servers and all kinds of stuff, but they're going to have to go to a lot of effort. And hopefully, people will be more interested in playing the game that I'm making than fucking around making their own lobby servers and whatnot. But all that's totally possible. It's just PC code. Like, as soon as you're on the PC, there's no guarantees of any of this stuff. But I wanted to do as much as I could without inconveniencing the user. I want to make it simpler for players, not more complicated, to actually log on to the game and have a good experience. Scalable. This is a big deal nowadays. You can just randomly get, you know, Reddited and, like, have 100,000 people try and sign up for your game in one day. And so what that means is you have to understand how to make scalable architectures. And this means very few centralized services. It means you can't actually, like, need to talk to one centralized authoritative voice for very many things. And if you're going to do that, they need to be replicatable and have very few rights to them. So, for example, Kerberos and LDAP, which are the things I'm using for authentication and authorization, are both very mature Unix system server technologies that, while they are centralized, they solve that by replication. Everything else you run in the cloud. Load balanced, you know, you use Amazon Web Services or you use Google App Engine or whatever the cloud, you know, thing of your choice is. And you make sure that everything is very lightly coupled. And this is another thing that Kerberos allows, is all of these things to be decentralized while still being able to trust each other. You have to load test everything. Indies all talk to each other, and it's constantly you run into the problem, quote unquote, of having your game get popular, and everything goes down. Your website goes down, your lobby servers go down, everything goes down. And, it's possible to avoid that, if you're willing to spend the time load testing. And just like normal computer game testing, load testing is an art. It's, you have to know how to test. You have to know how to emulate the actual kind of traffic that you're going to get, and you can't assume anything. So and then tied with that is incremental rollout. You want to the extent possible, not have to bring 100,000 people in. So what I did is I realized I'm not going to be able to have all of this stuff scalable by the time I need to ship my beta. So what I'm going to do is I want to move the unknown amount of load into one very controllable spot. And what I did was I made an open call for email signups to be then invited into the beta when the beta is ready. So now all I had to do was deal with the fact that the email signup system might get Reddited, which it did. And so, you know, that goes on the front page of Reddit, and I can load test that by pounding on it with Perl scripts and things that emulate user traffic. I can, you know, put the web signup stuff on CloudFront, which is Amazon's content delivery network, that sort of thing. So now I can incrementally, now that I have these, you know, and I got 5,000 people sign up for it in the first day, which is great. And nothing went down. In fact, I so over-engineered it because I had tested it at such a higher load than that like it didn't even hitch. Which is awesome. I mean, you'd rather be on that side than on the scrambling for, you know, to pay someone to, you know, upgrade your server. But now all the load and the rollout is under my control. So now I have these people and I can invite 10. You know, I'm focusing right now and just get the first 10 people in, right? And I'm still drowning in all the stuff I got to do there. Once those people are in and I fix all the bugs, then I can invite the next 20 and then the next 40 and then 100. And so as soon as I get to the point where I can invite 1,000 people and the thing just stays up and humming, then I can open it up, right? So you kind of move the load around. It's something that's slightly under your control. And so that's an important thing. And then finally, I want it to be flexible. So it's going to suck in a billion different ways, but I want to know all of the different ways it's going to suck and know how to fix it when it comes time to fix it. And so it's impossible to design something, especially something large scale like this, from scratch without having it suck. So try and figure out where it's going to suck ahead of time and know how to control it and know how to fix it in the long run. And another thing is don't be afraid to patch these existing libraries. So, for example, Kerberos is a giant pile of code, but I'm using it in a slightly different way than other people are. So you ask on the mailing list and you say, it doesn't do this, does it? And they're like, no, but, you know, it would be easy to fix this if I did this. Oh, is that secure? Yes. Here are these guys. These people of all these large-scale open-source packages are very happy to talk to you, especially if you're going to contribute patches back to them. So I've patched a whole bunch of different libraries so far and contributed the patches back, and that's great. And that's what open source is all about. And by doing that, I learn the systems better. So here are some of the components I'm using, which is just a giant spaghetti mess of acronyms and whatnot. So in some sense, I'm doing all of this myself, and in another very real sense, I'm not. I'm kind of piecing together all these very mature packages to make sure. Now, the glue and making it all work smoothly together, it takes a lot of code as well, but I'm not trying to write everything from scratch. This one about the languages over here in the corner is important. Like, I have absolutely no religion when it comes. I hate all computer languages, so it's very important not to have religion and think that anything is just use the wrong tool for the job. You know, the rightest of all the wrong tools for the job. You do have to kind of understand things like what HMAC means and things like that. You need to actually, if you want to make things secure, when you're gluing these libraries together, you need to know how to make them communicate in a secure manner and things like that. So there's a ton of learning you need to do. I hope to write a bunch of articles for this after I get it all working and I know it actually works. Okay, so some preempting some questions. Why the hell am I doing all this myself? Why don't I use Steam or XBLA or PSN, which I'm going to be on all these platforms, hopefully. Why not start with what all the Web 2.0 people call the minimum viable product and iterate from there? And so the answer to the last one first, this is the minimum viable product that I am willing to ship, right? I am not going to ship something that you have to enter an IP address in just for my own personal artistic reasons. That's fine. Other people can do that. It's obviously not a requirement one way or the other, and that's great. That's one of the beautiful things about being indie. But more importantly, the reason I'm choosing to do almost all of this myself, or at least glue all these things together myself, is because I want a deep understanding of the problem space. I knew when I started this almost nothing about authentication, authorization, scalability, and all of these things. And so when I move, if I had immediately moved to Steam or done my beta on XBLA or Steam, I would have no idea what the right way to do things is versus the way they happen to do it, right? And so now I will be able to say, okay, I can customize my situation for Spy Party, what the best experience for my players is. And then when it's time to move onto these different platforms, I can say like, oh, they do it this other way. I need to talk to them to get them to change this, or I need to work around this because I know actually now what the right thing is from a polish standpoint. I can make a very good argument. Whereas if I've never done this before, you make an argument. So for an example of that kind of thing is like Braid, when John put it on XBLA, it is a cert requirement to have a menu. And he's like, I don't want to have a menu. And he had to have a huge battle to just have it say Braid at the beginning and not, you know, and you walk off, not have a like, play a game, blah, 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 all the stuff that would interrupt. And I want to be able to do that same thing for infrastructure. You just have to know exactly what you want and how to get it done. And that's incredibly valuable when you're doing something that has a lot of artistic meaning to you, when it's something that's very powerful and you're really expressing yourself. Like, I find that every aspect, especially with a network multiplayer game, like how the single sign-on works matters to the overall aesthetic experience the player's having. Everything matters when you're doing a kind of piece of art entertainment. And so that's the answer to these questions. Thank you very much. Are there other questions? Or did I answer all my own questions? Yeah. Yep.
I know that ATD is running their own
Right, so the question is, like, with these third-party, you know, open-source packages like Bugzilla or PHPBB or whatever, can you run some of that stuff through the game? You want to have both, right? So, for example, you want to have the ability to report a bug in the game when you see the bug and it snaps like, you know, a journal of what's happened so far, maybe it takes a stack dump and that kind of thing, and that's all going to be in there as well. But you also want the person to be in the forums and, you know, write a real bug report, right, and attach images and all kinds of, you know, basically be able to type in a real, you know, in their browser. So what I've done is I made sure that anything, I've actually deferred the Bugzilla thing, but like for PHPB is a perfect example. I wrote, most of these things have authentication plugins you can write, so I wrote some PHP code that talks to my single sign-on thing. So you go from the homepage in the beta and you click on the forums and boom, it auto-creates an account if it's not one there. It's all the exact same thing. So you never have to log on or anything. So just trying to make it really smooth like that so that, you know, if you were going to report a bug in Bugzilla, if I did the in-game bug reporting system with a stack dump and everything, then when you went to Bugzilla, it would be there. I would want to do it so it created that in the same, so it's all visible from all directions. So it doesn't feel like there's anything just like totally bolted on or anything like that. It's not like, oh, here's the forums and create another account and keep your passwords in sync or don't or whatever. It just all feels like one, I mean, professional is a word for it, I guess, but it just feels solid. It's not polished, is in some sense the wrong word, because it's going to be crufty, like the CSS is not going to be perfect or whatever, but it's going to feel solid, like there's an underlying, you know, you might need new draperies, but it doesn't feel like the house is going to fall down. Yes?
I've heard a lot of horror stories from indies who start to pre-order with PayPal, getting their accounts blocked and things.
Right.
How do you feel about that if you looked at any alternatives?
Yeah, so the question is horror stories with PayPal locking their accounts. I hope I make enough money off the beta to have my account locked by PayPal. There are worse problems to have. I'm eventually going to support. So basically, I talked to the Humble Indie Bundle guys. They support PayPal, Amazon Web, you know, Amazon Payments, and Google Checkout, right? And I'm going to do PayPal, and they gave me numbers that like PayPal 75%, and then it's like, you know, Amazon and Google are the remainder, and then, you know, and so it just their advice was do PayPal first, get that working, because there's just all this infrastructure, like a lot of those diagrams are just all, and you can plug in a new payment provider with that, you know, that, you know, so like PayPal has this thing called IPN, instant payment notification. So what happens is you go register on my site, I forward you to PayPal, you finish with PayPal, PayPal talks to my server without you being in the loop, tells me whether the thing is complete or not, so I can send you to another page that Ajax pulls my server. When the IPN's done, the thing changes from a little like busy signal to like, hey, click to log on, right? So all that, they all have things like IPN, right? So it's not that hard to switch them all in. I didn't know any of this shit like 3 months ago, so like, you can just learn all this. There's tons of docs, but So it's just not that hard to plug new ones in. When, you know, I went and looked, and I was like, okay, here's how Google does it, here's how this does it. So if I do it, if I make this thing, you know, PHP and that thing over there, a piece of Perl script or whatever, it'll I'll be able to plug the other guys in. It'll take a couple days to do each one, but you know, that's an example of know how to fix it, right? So there's going to be some percentage, 25%, whatever the percentage, of people who won't use PayPal, for example, right? That's fine. They're just going to have to wait. Like, everyone's going to have to wait because I'm going to slowly build this stuff. At some point, I'll add the other two, and that gets you to 95%. And then it's like, hey, email support at spyparty.com and email me, or just send me a check. Whatever. I'm fine. I'm easy. I just, like, I need to get most people going through the common pass, right? PayPal, you know, they lock your account when you don't have a bank accounts hooked up to it. There's a whole bunch of things you can do to ease that, but I mean, like, it's not that big of it. I mean, if you've had Minecraft got locked when he, like, made $600,000 in a day. It's like, okay, great. That would fund my entire game. So if I've got that problem, I'll work it out with PayPal. Yeah?
I'm curious if you're hearing how the
pay
is going to work.
Sure. In what sense?
Oh
yeah, so the stuff I've talked about so far, so how's the paid beta gonna work? The stuff I've talked about so far is, I mean, so all of those AAA indie games that I put on that list that are kind of like the games that are kind of, I'm patterning Spy Party after in the sense of like it being a new, I mean, genre is a stupid word, but you know, like that kind of new, format for games, they're all $15, right? And I think that $15 is like a great thing. Not because all games should be $15, like Klifsky, who's who makes games in the UK for the PC, thinks that 15 is a little too low. He makes kind of hardcore sims on the, like gratuitous space battles, those games, Positech. But for me, it's kind of like when the CD prices came out and finally stabilized at whatever they stabilized at, $9.95 or $12, whatever they were. Like, players now have like an expectation for what $15 means in terms of gameplay, and that's better than being able to get $5 if they might be 20, or you know, like $3 if you get it to $19.95, whatever. So I'm gonna make it $15. I might have an alternative price. A lot of people have said like, hey, I want to give you more money to help you fund the game. I might have an alternative thing. I haven't talked about that yet, but I'm gonna hopefully announce that kind of thing soon. But for the most part, you're gonna pay $15, and the standard is you pay the amount of money. So $15 in the case of like game that, you know, if it was gonna be a PC only game, I could charge more, right? In fact, World of Goo, for example, charges $20 on the PC and it's $15 on consoles, which, and they don't find any like erosion of their prices by the other platforms. So it's pretty, I mean, people are irrational about pricing, right? Like, I mean, every economy study in the history of the world has shown that. But for me, it's just easier for my I have so many variables in my head right now, like $15 everywhere. You pay for it. I'll give you the Mac version. You can validate it on Steam later. You know, you get the full thing when you're done. I'd give you the XBLA version if Microsoft will allow me to do that. I don't know. I doubt they will, but Steam allows you to do that. I can give you a key later. So it's $15 and you're done. You get the thing when it ships. So, and then the way it's going to work is what I would say, the way it's going to roll out, what I said, that's why I took the email address first so I could get all unknown load onto one Perl script, or PHP script, right? So I, you know, made sure, I load tested that, I made sure that worked. Boom, I got all these email addresses, that was great. It's still rolling along, it's in the tail now, it's like 20 people sign up a day. I tried to be very clear on the sign up page that you're going to be expected to pay, it's a paid beta. So I don't think 100% of those people are going to know that. A lot of people just enter their email address and hit go without even saying. But if it's 50%, that's great, that's still totally fine. I'll slowly start inviting people, and you know, as it scales, eventually, we don't have to switch to Amazon Web Services, like I said, instead of my servers, because as soon as you get enough concurrent players. But I'll have like some income and, more importantly, some experience fixing all of the easy stuff first, right? So, you know, take baby steps, but like I have this, like my MVP, like I said, is this, I want to have all of these pieces in place so that I can polish them later. Were there other questions about how it was going to work, or did that answer it?
I think we need to... Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm done. Thank you.